Susan's experience with Alzheimer's and dementia has gained her recognition in lecturing and training on the subject of communication with this population. The techniques in Ms. Kohler's book are the central focus with UCLA's research project, quote, Therapeutic Communication During Nursing Home Care, which addresses communication issues between nursing home staff and frail older residents. Susan is also a dynamic actress and singer and attributes this training to enhancing her skills as a therapist working with the frail elderly. Susan also brings her fellow artist friends to perform and visit with patients and residents at her facilities. The responses still amaze her, what seems to be withdrawn, lifeless individuals emerge into smiling, laughing, singing, and interactive human beings. She believes human connection is vital to stimulating positive experiences of communicating, sharing, and bonding, building self-esteem and wellness in persons that many think cannot understand or express their ideas and interests. Susan, welcome to It's Your Health on Thinking Out Loud on WUML 91.5 FM.
Well, thank you. Good morning to you, too.
Good morning. Now, Susan, in your wonderful book, Communicating with Alzheimer's, A Practical Guide and Workbook for Families, you share a story called The Smile, quote, an elderly woman sat in a wheelchair being fed by a tube inserted into her stomach. She could no longer sustain herself by oral nutrition. Her face was expressionless. Her only form of verbal expression was, for the most part, babbled syllables repeated over and over until she became restless and agitated. It was as if her behavior was a cry to have someone, anyone, pay attention to her. Now, Susan, what happened when you met her eyes and said good morning?
You know, it was just the most amazing experience, and it's something that still, whenever anybody talks about it or I tell people about it, the feeling that comes over me is so strong. She sat there, and even people walked by her, which was so, you know, sad to see, and no one would reach out and make any connection to her. And when I looked up at her and our eyes met, I somehow just said, good morning. And the instant I said that to her, she stopped babbling. She broke into this beautiful broad smile, and she looked at me and just said, thank you. And it really did, you know, show me in that moment that this is what we're here for, is to connect with other human beings. And this is a large part of our population right now that we need to reach out and say good morning to.
Yeah, it's true. You know, another thing that you wrote that I thought was just beautiful is you write, you know, quote, you take away a person's ability to connect with other human beings, and isolation, declining health, depression, and rapid loss of ability and quality of life will quickly follow. And that's why your book is so wonderful, because it's just a guide that really, I mean, step by step helps you understand how to communicate and what to do and what not to do. And before we get into that, if we can just talk a little bit about, you know, what is dementia, and if we can talk about Alzheimer's disease as well.
Well, yeah, specifically to Alzheimer's and trying to make it as simple as possible.
Sure.
In the time that we get to chat a little bit. You know, Alzheimer's is the most prevalent form of dementia that we have. Alzheimer's is a form of dementia, and it is the most prevalent at this point. We have other medical and, different disease processes that will affect a person's ability to relay their thought process and function in terms of, you know, what we want our brain to tell our body to do. But with Alzheimer's in specific, what happens is there's buildup between these little nerve cells that kind of need to fire and communicate to each other. And these little proteins that turn into like little plaque buildups or little tangles kind of impair that ability to happen. So while you're trying to get your body, you know, to do something, the brain isn't able to respond and fire those connective systems to do that. And over time, that's going to impede your ability to function. And it has a lot to do with your thought processes, which is how you communicate. So right away, you're not able to process information coming in, say something to a person, cooperate with that person, express your needs if you have discomfort or pain or just a simple desire to connect. So really the basis for the care for these people with dementia is how we communicate and connect with them.
Yeah. I mean, if you're talking in the way that you would be talking really quickly and not really, that's not a way, obviously, to communicate. And there's so many things in the book. If you can just give us some of the tips for ways that are better for communicating so you can really
sure.
reach.
I think, yeah. And I think one of the best pieces of information I can give people this morning is that one of the first things we do with anybody who has difficulty communicating is you'll notice that they can't really initiate well. Part of it is their processing is starting to slow down, and then their ability to formulate a response is also slowing down and becoming impaired. And what we need to do is stop, literally stop, and give that person time. to warm up to us, to connect with us, to give us their attention to a level that they can begin to process information and stimuli coming in. And that's hard because you and I here talking at a pretty good pace
yeah.
can shift pretty well with that. But a person who has dementia, and remember, typically they're going to be action, or if you're taking care of that person, you've also got a person now who can cooperate. And for that caregiver or that person that's trying to help that person, that lessens the stress.
Oh, yeah.
At that moment, tremendously. And it is the biggest burden. Caregivers report that the communication breakdown is what really causes the biggest problem initially with their activities of daily living.
Mm-hmm.
So getting someone's attention, removing distractions from the room, looking at them in the eye, getting, you know, face-to-face with them is what really is going to help strengthen the connection and the ability to process together. And that's what you need.
Yeah, you definitely do. I mean, there's art that you just mentioned about caregivers. You know, I've known caregivers, whether someone has an illness or someone has dementia, it's very stressful. And they really, you know, the more tools that they can have, the better able they're going to care for themselves and care for the person that they're helping.
Absolutely. And, you know, just like anything, doing this is learning a technique.
Yes.
You know, a technique is a skill required to do a task. And so you got to get in there and try these communication techniques. The first one being, how can you garner attention and keep it so that you have this good interaction no matter what your task is? And then from there, you'll see that some of the other things that I talk about, like making sure you always use a calm tone in your voice, you can reach out and use a little touch, all these things help can keep that connection so that there's safety in your care and less burden in giving that care. And it's a tremendous, you know, it's really going to make a significant difference in your ability to connect with someone.
Mm-hmm.
No matter what the process is that's going on, it's not just specific to dementia, although this is becoming a very, you know, obviously huge area where we need to bring in our seniors back into the fabric of our society and not let them get isolated.
Yeah,
and it has to do with reaching out and connecting.
Yeah, that's true. You know, in Chapter 3, Communication Strengths of Persons with Alzheimer's and Dementia, you talk about routine being very important, and you also talk about working with the brain that remains, and I really like that. If you can tell us about that.
Yeah, working with the brain that remains has to do with the strengths. There's a, mm-hmm. There is a kind of a, and everyone might be a little different, but in general, there's this what we call this reserve that happens with someone who is faltering in this way with their cognition. But there's things that help them respond, and one of them is the routine. It creates security. The other is the recognition. You know, what's familiar in their life, they're going to respond to with a lot more positive and you know, kind of a, in terms of that routine, they know what's happening. They feel secure that way. So if we can be consistent with them, we're going to draw on that strength of their reserve and recognition, which is why, you know, things in your long-term memory are a little easier.
Mm-hmm.
Because we're used to those. We do those repetitively. We have a thing even called procedural memory, which is the things that have a sequence to them. But we do them so rotely that we're comfortable with that.
I see.
And those are the things that you want to tap into. Mm-hmm. Other things, you know, that I'm sure that you're aware of, things like music, reciting and singing.
Yes, I was just going to bring that up.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. That, the warmth that that brings to us, it's kind of like an area in your brain that has a lot of what we call that area of spontaneity and things that are very, very familiar. And it's in this area that's easy to tap into, and it has an emotional connection to it. So it's always important to use the things that a person likes. So I had talked to a person the other day who said, my mother loves Tony Bennett.
Oh.
So we put on Tony Bennett, and we sing. And it just brings delight to both of them. They enjoy doing that.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't matter how good you sing. It just is a matter of that music feels good.
Oh, totally. And that must be fun for you, being an actress and a singer. Is that what got you interested in working with this population?
I think that's what showed me how accessible it is.
Mm-hmm.
Because once I started using my music and my acting training to be creative about what I could come forward and bring and say and do, I noticed they started to respond. And then as I brought my friends over, when we would do some music for them, my friends quickly got into that. They noticed the connection would happen. And then they could sit down with these, with particular individuals that they may have been performing for and realize that they started to open up, where they may have been sitting there and just you know, looking kind of expressionless, not seemingly able to attend, changes mm-hmm. would just come over their faces. And a lot was brought out by music.
Oh, that's great. Yeah, I absolutely love music. Now, in Chapter 6, it's talking about troubleshooting difficult behavior, and there's definitely some things. And one thing I really loved is you talk about a memory book, and if you can tell us what that is and what it's used for.
Oh, yeah. You know, memory books are really nice. You can, some people call them life story books. I think they're people that, companies that make the scrapbooks, you know, that help people have materials for scrapbooks are kind of supporting this notion to make these life story books or these memory books, which has all the information about a person from their background to their likes and their hobbies, or even if they're at a facility where there's professional staff, they seem to get a little tired of those repetitive questions.
Oh,
yet
of course.
Those questions or those, you know, advances are really someone asking for connection. They're seeking someone out to connect with.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have a memory book on hand that has information about that person, no matter how well you know them, you can open up that book and help stimulate and facilitate memories or ideas or things that are familiar, again, the recognition for that person, which will make them be able to sit with you and focus in a very safe manner and connect in a lovely exchange.
Oh.
I use a detailed explanation in my book, I think, that you're referring to, where there was a woman who got so restless by the end of the day that once we brought her book out, and one of my associates would, you know, look at her book, and one day I saw her open the book and say, "Oh, I see here that you were a seamstress." That particular woman sat down and just opened up all about her life stories and how proud she was
Aww.
She made clothes, and she settled down, and then the exchange was just calming and positive. And I think that's the thing I like to bring out with my book, Lisa, is that there's a lot of optimism in terms of creating good connections. And while it is difficult at times and there may be behaviors we have to try to help and not let escalate, we can bring about positive exchanges by using good techniques.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And one thing, you know, speaking of the negative, you emphasize that it is important not to argue. And if you can talk about that a little bit.
Oh, yeah, not to argue. And isn't that one of the hardest
things? Oh, my God.
I think human beings, our nature to confront, sometimes
yes.
gets a little out of hand. And I think any time that we do come forward and perhaps have said something that's a little confrontative to someone who may not have really necessarily meant anything in a negative way to us, we have to, and we respond probably not so positively, we have to first of all forgive ourselves. You know, that's going to happen.
Yeah.
And then just come back with some kind of reassurance and understanding that, you know, I tell people all the time, first of all, to say, "I'm so sorry. I didn't mean to say that to you," or, "I'm sorry that you feel uncomfortable. I'm sorry that you're frustrated." And then just come back with a positive exchange, because if you argue or if you get confrontative, you're not going to really help either one of you, just, you know, either
That's
one of
true.
You at that point.
Yeah, I mean, the calm is gone. You're going to be doing
exactly.
that. And the other thing that's good in your book is, you know, there are issues of wandering and hallucinations and paranoia, and you also have advice for that. So that is really helpful. But
I try to break it down, like you say, and give people ideas to go back to the strategies if there's
mm-hmm.
a particular behavior mm-hmm. and see why the communication broke down
yeah.
and then how you might approach the situation. And, of course, always we want to make sure that we always keep our physician in the loop if this becomes something that happens really on an increasing frequency that
oh,
needs
yeah.
to be looked at by our physician.
Yeah.
But you're right. If we look at where communication is broken down, there's a lot of things we can help ourselves to keep some of these behaviors at least not into a risky manner, you know, where there we can get the communication and the attention back into a positive way.
And how do you deal with, you know, if we can just take a moment, with refusals, like I'm refusing to take medicine or getting dressed or whatever it is, because I'm sure that could be incredibly frustrating for the caregiver.
Exactly. And refusals happen a lot. And when they start to escalate, you know, that's when you've really, you know, if you start to get refusals, you've got to start to look right away at, are you connected?
Oh, I see.
Because typically the refusals are someone is trying to tell us something that they're not able to communicate well. Or perhaps the activity that's happening at that moment is happening way too quickly or in such a way that they can't process what's being expected of them. And even though it may be medication, you still have to look at, did I come too quickly with the medication? Did I put it in front of them before they really processed what they saw and heard that I've asked them to do? Are they right now simply so distracted that I can't get that attention? So even though we think of it as, oh, they don't want to take their medicine, you have to look at why they refused to take that medicine.
What was
happening in their behaviors that told us that we didn't have a good connection with them to understand where they were coming from?
I see.
So you have to really stop, look, you know, listen in terms of with your eyes and your ears, what's happening. Do you need to slow down and approach them again? Do you need to simply change the activity for a while? And then in a few minutes, maybe 10, 15 minutes, come back and do the medication again. Sometimes you have to just sit down and reestablish that connection.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Now, do you think that there's some people who work with the elderly that just assume they're checked out and that's why they don't even try to do these things? I mean, I just was thinking of that. I wonder if that ever happens, and that's probably what's causing a lot of the problem, is not realizing that they are in there, you know?
Right, and it's so true, you know? And yet when we sit down and establish connection, we have someone then that participates.
Well, everyone who works with older folks should be reading your book. I mean, it's wonderful. And I want to thank you so much for coming on. And if you can tell more information, how can people find out about you, more about you? And I'm sure you can get the book anywhere.
Sure. The book, of course, is available, but I have a website.
Oh, great.
That way you can go and you can get the book now in three different forms. You can actually do it in a hard copy, which is what I recommend because I like people to spend time with the techniques. And I made the book with big borders on the pages.
Oh, it's great. Yeah, I took lots
of
notes.
What works for you. Mm-hmm. But you can also get it in an e-form, you know, an e-book.
Okay.
And I just finished being able to get it ready on Kindle. So that the information is available, but you can, you know, see what form is going to work for you. And my website is grpublishing.com, which is G like George, R like Robert, grpublishing.com. And if you go online there, it will just give you all the ways that, and more information about the book and myself and the research I'm doing and any other, you know, questions. You can also interact with me if you need some extra help or some extra advice. If there's resources I can help you find, I'm very available for that.
Oh, Susan, that's wonderful. I want to thank you so much. I want to thank you so much for what you're doing. It's really, really wonderful. And I hope you have a wonderful day.
Thank you so much for letting me chat with you. It's been wonderful.
Oh, terrific. I'm so glad. We'll have to have you come back sometime. It was really great. Now, if people want to contact me, they can go to itsyourhealthradio.org. Now, keep listening. In a moment, we'll be joined by Terry Chaney, the author of the bestseller Manic, a memoir. So stay tuned.